We present Teddy Johnson as Steve Gardner in The Wolf Far Hence, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. Part four, The Twist.
Great oaks from little acorns grow. Straws break camels' backs, the tiny rift within the lute that by and by will make the music mute. Folk wisdom, and sometimes not so folk wisdom. And sometimes it takes shape, and the shape is a person. Maybe you don't like metaphors, so let's get down to cases. There had been two killings, and there was this strange little man called Ketch. Fat, fatuous, easy words till you add another one, faith. And because of this, he was going to meet a killer. I followed the little man quietly downstairs. He moved with a naturalist's silence and caution. Once, he paused for a second, freezing like a bird dog, before moving on. And I, too, saw the young constable, asleep in a chair, his mouth wide open as though announcing his own disobedience. I hoped his coat didn't fit too well. That way it wouldn't hurt so much when his superiors had it off his back. Outside, the world was breathless, the deep, deep silence of space. Life temporarily suspended in a kind of off-peak period. I kept behind Ketch, but not too easily. He had left the road now and followed a heather track that rose sharply towards the loch. There was a slight ground mist that made everything seem to waver. Then Ketch stopped beside a huge thrusting rock that overlooked the dark loch. And after a while he spoke to some invisible person.
I'm glad you came. I knew you'd come, of course. You had to know, hadn't you? In a way, that's your punishment. Always having to know, and always having to dread the next piece of knowledge. I wonder how I appear to you. A funny little fat man, I suppose, with thick glasses and a killing bottle. A bug hunter. At least all I ever killed was insects. I know you despise me. You probably always have despised me. And once, not so very long ago, that would have hurt me very badly. But now, it doesn't matter in the slightest. Because, you see, your assessment of anything just isn't valid anymore. Because you're insane. All this rubbish they talk about, the cunning of insanity. You weren't even halfway intelligent, were you? Just lucky. Lucky that it was me. An idiot that was prepared to use himself against himself. An old dog that didn't want to learn new tricks. You know my name. Ketch. Not a pleasant name. The name of a celebrated old-time hangman. Oh, I call myself Jonathan, but my birth certificate says Jack. Yes, that was his Christian name, too, if Christian has any meaning in that context. For God's sake, will you please stop whistling? My childhood was a crucifixion. A master at school started it, a sadistic failure with bad breath. Oh, and the boys readily took up the game. That is why, to this day, I have an almost pathological dislike of string. I grew up hating my name and everything it symbolized. Then one day, I read somewhere that it was not the hangman who dishonored society. It was society that dishonored the hangman. Oh, I wish I had words to convey. It was like finding a new color. From that moment, I was a passionate opponent of capital punishment. But For all the wrong reasons. For personal reasons. Then one day, they suspend capital punishment. They do the very thing I had been bleating for them to do for years. And when they did that, they took away something from me. My dynamic, my purpose, whatever you like to call it. And what did I do? I pretended it hadn't happened. Yes, I pretended it just hadn't happened. Of course, I made my own rationalization, my petty excuses, rubbish about the quality of the victims, stuff like that. But I wasn't really worrying about the victims. I wasn't even interested in identifying with them. I was preoccupied with people like you. In effect, I was saying that murder isn't a crime at all. And that's how it was a year ago when I met you. Caught you red-handed from a murder. Literally red-handed. You may remember I was sick. I didn't betray you. But you betrayed me. You killed again. And you killed in a way that placed an innocent girl at risk. And I suddenly realized that murder can have innocent, living victims. So, you will surrender yourself to the police not later than 6 o'clock this evening. If you don't, I'll tell them the truth myself, regardless of consequences. And may the Lord have mercy on your soul.
What are you doing? You fool! Let go of me! You crazy maniac! Let me go!
I started to rush forward and fell. A scrubby tree slashed me across the face, almost contemptuously. The silence settled down again as though nothing had happened. As though someone hadn't vanished into the mist. As though someone else hadn't vanished over the edge of a cliff. It took me a long time to find him. I looked down at him and wondered, saint or simpleton? Simpleton or saint? Then I decided categories didn't really matter when your neck is broken. I set off to find the way back to the hotel. The mist had settled in now, and walking through it was like being in a milk bottle along with the milk. Dawn didn't really arrive. The darkness simply paled. Water dripped from skeletal branches. There was something irrational about that mist. It was like a sheet covering a world that no one had any longer any use for. Then suddenly there was a clearing and a tiny house, lime washed but streaked leprously with climbing green damp.
Anybody home?
Who is it?
I'm lost.
We are lost. Come in, lost man.
Thank you.
Mind your head.
Ouch.
Oh, you'll be about 6 feet.
I am.
I can always tell the height of a man by how he hits his head coming into this house.
Are you blind?
No.
It's so dark in here.
I cannot be buying candles and whiskey.
I was trying to get back to the hotel.
You had better be staying here till the mist clears.
I'm in a hurry. There's been an accident.
There will be another if you leave this house. The moss would swallow you up like a cherry.
But this mist could hang around for days.
I have known it to be like this for a fortnight of days.
Well, I can't wait that long.
Living at the hotel, you will be a very rich man.
Now that's what I call jumping to a conclusion.
You will perhaps have a small piece of silver to spare for a poor woman.
Three new 10-shilling pieces. 150 new pence.
And 30 old-fashioned pieces of silver.
Enough?
There is no limit to your honor's generosity. A blessing on you, your honor. I beg without pride.
Well, this is a lonely spot you live in?
Loneliness is loveliness. I have been dragged the roads of the world at the tail of a cart in the wake of a stupid man. He beat me and starved me, but I followed still, being stupid as he was.
But you're alone now?
This past year.
Your name couldn't be McPhee.
It would, and a wood tinkered name it is.
It was your husband who was killed on an island in the loch.
Butchered like a sheep. I know the island well, a grand place for blueberries. After that, Captain Bevis gave me this house to sit in, rent-free. He is a man with an open hand, the captain, and he was sorry for me, no doubt, now that someone had taken Willie John McKee away from me. He had his good points, had Willie John. He would sing you a song, mend you a pot, weave you a basket, and play you anything at all on the pipes. He could read and write as well.
Oh, is that unusual?
It is with us travelling people. But Willie John could read and write, and that is why he died.
Well, I can read and write, but I've never regarded it as fatal.
It made Willie John McPhee no longer humble.
You know who killed him, don't you? I might even know myself.
Knowing and showing are different things, and you will get no help there from me for all your 30 pieces of silver.
You have no bitterness?
Every morning I waken, and I see the sun, or I lie listening to the rain, and I know that that day and the next there will be no beatings and no hunger. I know that there is whiskey at my hand and food to come from the big house. And I stretch myself like a cat, and I say to my warm loneliness, God bless the man who killed Willie John McPhee.
I was there for 3 hours with the mist closing us round like a goldfish bowl. Then a light breeze came up and let the day arrive, and I said farewell to the woman without bitterness. The happy widow of Willie John McPhee. I went back to the hotel. I was tired, wet, hungry, and the scratch across my face was hurting. There was a smell of breakfast cooking, and my tidy mind wondered if I should tell somebody that one of them would never be eaten. Gordon was waiting for me in the lounge. He stood up and came striding towards me, and his face said anything but welcome.
By faith, Gardner, you take a lot on yourself.
Someone has to when the law's lying asleep all over the place.
I've already taken care of that. Now you've some explaining to do.
About what?
About you slipping out of the hotel.
Why shouldn't I slip out of the hotel? Am I a suspect?
No, but...
What are you, the Gestapo?
I'm talking about Ketch.
You haven't even mentioned him.
Judy told me
If I'd stopped to bring your sleeping sentry to life, I'd have lost Ketch. As it was, I had all hell's delight keeping up with him.
Did he come back with you?
He won't be coming back.
Did you let him run away?
He's dead.
Detective Sergeant Grant will run that imbecile constable out of the force.
That's his hassle.
Tell me what happened.
Well, you know that I followed Ketch out.
He was going to meet somebody.
That's how it turned out.
Who was it?
I don't know.
Man, were you even there?
I was there. It was weird. The most fantastic one-sided conversation I've ever heard. Ketch went on and on, justifying himself. I'll write it all down for you as far as I can remember it. Whoever he was talking to just stood there whistling.
Whistling?
Yes, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Pretty appropriate it turned out to be.
Look, Gardner, when you finished your embroidery...
Shut up. You and your team have been pretty inept, both this time and last time.
All right, I'll hear you out.
Well, there isn't much more. Ketch told the murderer to come to you tonight at 6:00. The murderer didn't like that idea. Ketch got thrown over a cliff.
By whom?
I don't know.
What?
I couldn't even say whether it was a man or a woman. There was the mist. And whoever it was standing in the shadow of a huge rock.
Oh, that would be Craig's Point.
I wouldn't know.
A place with an enormous rock standing by itself on the edge of a sheer drop.
Now, that sounds like it, all right.
I'll get down there with that team right away.
Gordon?
Yes?
Before you go.
What is that?
Last night in here, when you were doing your... Fay and eerie bit. You mentioned a name, Elspeth.
Elspeth MacDonald.
That's it. She saw the devil, so you said.
So she said.
In the likeness of a black man, right?
Not only right, traditional.
Did you believe her?
Gardner, this is a very quiet spot. Nothing much really ever happens here. But when something does...
Something like a murder?
When something like that happens, then all kinds of people want to add their little quota of drama.
So you reckon it was all in her head?
If it was, it was very lonely. Elspeth is a most attractive girl. But she is as thick in the head as the rim of a chamber pot.
You did try to check her story.
Well, her boyfriend, or the one she was with on that particular night, he denied the whole thing. And the devil himself we were not able to contact. And now, if you'll excuse me, I'll be getting down to Craig's point.
The mist had gone, and a tremulous sun gave promise of one of those tearful days that seemed to be testing out for spring. Beyond the windows, you could see little green periscopes that would soon be daffodils. You could probably have found snowdrops if you'd tried. On the wet lawn was a flock of passerine birds, sparrows, chaffinches. A robin hopped among them, pompous and important. Behind the noise they made, there was a kind of excitement. They had survived. I went up to my room and washed and shaved, and then went down and ate a hearty country breakfast. When all these rituals taken care of, I went to see Judy with my good tidings, as pompous and important as the robin outside.
You scratched your face.
Yeah, I fell over a tree. I'm thinking of suing the Forestry Commission.
Inspector Gordon was looking for you.
I've seen him.
He's furiously angry.
Well, the shrinks call it displacement. He was really angry with that beef-fed clot of a constable, so he took it out on me. You know, like kicking a cat.
Tell me what happened.
I told her all about Ketch and the weird, weird conversation and the whistling in the mist and the last sad dying fall.
Poor little man.
He dug his own grave.
I still feel guilty, as though in some way it was my fault.
You'd need some fancy chop logic to justify that.
But if I hadn't come here in the first place...
Look, the situation was in being long before you came on the scene. You mustn't dramatize your part in it.
Oh, I suppose you're right.
Ketch was always talking about victims. That was because he was a born victim himself. Well, this puts you in the clear now. I suppose you realize that.
And all it cost was a man's life.
Well, maybe you'd have preferred to go to jail for something you didn't do. Do you have a martyr complex that size?
I don't have a martyr complex at all. It's just that...
It's just that you wish that life was neater and tidier and less unjust.
Perhaps.
Well, it's not neat, and it's far from tidy, and it's desperately unjust. And the wicked flourish in high places, and the good ones go to the wall.
Then it's hardly worth going on with, is it?
We go on because there's nowhere else to go.
Oh, that's too bleak for me, Steve.
It's bleak for all of us. So we make a little oasis here, and a little oasis there. And if we can get the right kind of oasis, we can get along.
Which brings us to us. What do we do about us, Steve?
Well, we could always throw the I Ching.
What is that?
A Chinese method of divination. It's a pretty elaborate ceremony done properly, but you can do it using pennies. You throw the pennies so many times, get a pattern, look up the book, and there's your answer.
I've got the pennies.
I've lost the book.
All of a sudden, I'm ashamed of Calder.
So you went to bed with him, so big deal.
Big deal.
You're not liberated yet, are you?
I don't know if I'm strong enough.
You'll make it, if you regard Calder as just another milestone on the journey.
And you?
The next milestone.
I'll think about it.
Well, don't think about it too long. I found my first grey hair this morning.
I'll think about it.
I am never one to interfere with anyone's thinking, especially when it concerns me. So I left Judy and went outside into the fresh air and walked along aimlessly, along the road that skirted Loch Darrick. The bay curved whitely like a jawbone, and a broken boat lay on its sand, a sad anatomy of past travel. There were oyster catchers paddling, tailored black and white bodies and bright orange bills, the smell of seaweed. Then the road jerked away to end itself violently against two pillars that had once held gates. Beyond the pillars, a track went writhing, rutted and potholed like an old battlefield. A burn kept talking to itself. There were still scarlet berries on the round trees. A timid sun broke itself into kaleidoscopic fragments. Then there was a surge of lawn, and beyond it, the lodge. Lochdarrig Lodge, the home of Captain Siegfried Bevis. It had all the cheating charm of the miniature. Pepperpot turrets that didn't look pompous, plenty of windows. It was a mixture of styles that liked each other enough to live harmoniously together. I crossed the lawn and a girl appeared from somewhere behind the house. She was about 19. And looking at her, you thought of Helen of Troy. And that if you must have wars, the beautiful woman is as good a reason as any, and better than most.
Am I trespassing?
We don't worry about that round here.
Well, that's unusual, isn't it?
I don't know.
Well, most private property is surrounded by electrified fences and gamekeepers with ray guns.
Maybe down in England. Not up here.
It's a beautiful house.
Full of dry rot and damp as well.
You're Elspeth MacDonald.
How do you know?
I heard about you at the hotel.
A lot of old fishwives up there.
No, nothing like that.
What were they saying about me?
Oh, we were talking about witchcraft. It's a subject I'm very interested in.
Do you write books?
My next one will be my first.
I've never met a writer before.
Oh, they're just like other people, only worse.
I did so see the devil.
I believe you.
They all laughed at me.
I'm not laughing.
I don't like people laughing at me.
I'm quite serious. I'd like to hear about it.
It was last year. The same night the tinker got done in.
Yes, I know that.
Me and Samuel Adair were out in the grounds. You know.
I can guess, yes. What time would this be about?
Oh, it wasn't long dark.
Well, how long is not long?
Pardon?
Would it be about 7 o'clock or 8?
Oh, I don't know. But it was dark.
So there you were with Samuel Adair.
Well, there's a kind of a clearing just down on the foreshore there from the lodge. Samuel and me were standing there. Samuel was...
carving your name on a tree.
How do you know that?
The devil told me.
Anyway, Samuel suddenly dropped his knife and stood there, his eyes staring out of his head. The next thing he got off his mark and ran off and left me. I turned round to see what it was.
And it was the devil?
Yes.
I'm told Samuel denies this.
Well, he would, wouldn't he?
Why?
You wouldn't expect him to admit he ran away and left me.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. What was the devil like?
Oh, he was big. And he was black from top to toe. And he was naked.
You're sure he was naked?
Oh, mister, I was brought up in a family with 6 brothers. Oh, here's the captain. I better get inside and see to his lunch.
Hello, Gardner. So you decided to pay us a visit?
I couldn't stay indoors on a day like this.
Magnificent, isn't it? Any day now, we'll have to think about bringing the sheep down from the hill. Always find it exciting. They come pouring down like grey boulders. Hey, come inside and have a drink.
It was one of those houses that absorbed you. Instant friendliness. A hallway, dappled like a young deer. A scent of furniture polish and clean countryside. A glass case that enshrouded an enormous salmon that seemed rigidly pleased to be there. Waders and Wellington boots, a suggestion of gun oil. Photographs of young men in flannels or rugby kit. A rowing eight, grotesquely overdressed for modern rivers. Soldiers, more real, but sadder than tin soldiers. Queen Victoria is alive and well, you thought, and hiding in Lochdarrig Lodge. And the afternoon will be golden and endless, and there will never be any lack of honey for tea. Then Bevis came back with a decanter that shone with the kind of amber light you'd never crash through, but always respect.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hmm. Now, there's a malt whiskey worthy of reverence.
20 years old. One of the few things my father and I agreed on.
I like your house.
Do you?
Very much indeed,
yes. Oh, actually, you get the best view of it the way you came. On a clear day, you can see the mortgage.
I didn't think you'd even know that word.
Nobody does, old boy. To everyone here, I am the great Milch Cow. In reality, I am the poor church mouse.
The new poor.
My father's doing, of course. He got rid of immense sums of money before his death.
Well, isn't that a way of avoiding paying death duties?
Well, it is if you keep it in the family.
And he didn't.
I was all the family he had.
Is that his portrait up there?
Strong physical resemblance, isn't there?
Yes. Must be very reassuring to a father when his children look like him.
Oh, I look like him. Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. But the resemblance ends there, I hope.
You didn't get on?
No. He hated my guts. Never really understood why.
Something you did? Or something you didn't do?
I honestly don't know. I thought and thought about it. I've leaned over backwards, trying to give him the benefit of every possible doubt. Things are still utterly baffling. You stay to lunch?
No, thank you, no. It's very kind of you, but I'd be terrified to disrupt the routine of the hotel.
I noticed you were having a word with Elspeth as I drove up.
I was indeed, yes.
An astonishing phenomenon, Elspeth, isn't she?
I'm not sure she isn't the most beautiful girl I've ever seen.
I always see her as Deirdre of the Sorrows.
Not wishy-washy enough. More Helen of Troy, I would have said.
Oh, perhaps. Find her fascinating myself. In a detached way, of course. That absolutely alarming beauty. And that equally alarming ignorance and stupidity.
Now, if she wasn't ignorant and stupid, she might take the world apart to see what made it tick.
What?
Where did you find her?
She more or less came with the house. Her mother worked here. All very feudal.
First generation serf.
I suppose you've heard about her encounter with the devil.
Yes.
He's never very far away from these parts.
No, indeed.
And if all the yarns are true, he's quite a character.
I haven't met him myself, but we have several mutual friends.
I suppose we could all say that.
I can't see Calder overlooking Elspeth.
Oh, he didn't.
Was she another scalp at his belt?
I believe he made his customary pass. I'm told she nearly slapped him silly.
I like her more and more. Well, I'd better be getting along.
Oh, have another drink before you go.
No, thank you. Better get along. I've got things to do.
Oh, well, if you must.
I walked back to the hotel, past the curving beach, through the pale lemon sunlight, to find awaiting me a reception committee. A furiously angry reception committee of one, Detective Inspector Gordon.
Well, Gardner.
Well, what have I done now?
There is humor and humor, Gardner, and yours I find very, very trying.
What is this?
I suppose you found it highly diverting to send us charging off there on a wild goose chase.
What the hell are you talking
Just
about?
Just this. There was nobody on the rocks below Craig's Point.
In The Wolf Far Hence by Edward Boyd, the parts were played as follows. Steve Gardner, Teddy Johnson, Jonathan Ketch, Walter Carr, Mrs. McPhee, Pearl Cahoon, Detective Inspector Gordon, Walter Kelsall, Judy Clark, Janet Michael, Elspeth MacDonald, Mary Riggins, Captain Siegfried Bevis, Robert Urquhart. The Wolf Far Hence was produced in our Glasgow studios by Eddie Fraser.